The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
He tried to remember the name of his own doctor, Donald Trump, and he messed that up while
exactly.
He was challenging Mr. Biden. What do you make of that?
I think Donald Trump is a joke. I would encourage Americans to go listen to Donald Trump's full speeches and try to put that word spaghetti together. And I wonder why anybody is questioning Joe Biden's mental acuity. Donald Trump can't string two sentences together. I mean, it's the biggest joke in the world.
But the way in which he exercises his frustration is to casually talk about having people who work for him shot, executed in some way. Well, I don't know if that's by hanging or by a guillotine or by the firing squad. I think, you know, whether you don't have to get all the way to Donald Trump was ordering the execution of staffers to
right.
think that this is a very dangerous temperament and a very dangerous mindset to have.
But he's at the G7. These paratroopers are landing. And in the clip that went viral from the RNC and the New York Post and all these right wing outlets that put it out there, you would think that Joe Biden was just a doddering old man that had to be yanked back by, the Italian leader.
We haven't even gotten to the AI piece of this. I mean, this is just taking just raw footage and editing it. Clipping it and editing it.
From the Juneteenth clip.
From Juneteenth clip.
I was talking to some students yesterday, and I asked them how many of them saw the video of the president at Juneteenth, and they all raised their hand. I'm like, what did you think? And they're like, oh, he was frozen. He was stuck. And I'm just like, do y'all not? First of all, I was sitting behind the president, and Kirk Franklin was on stage being like, I don't want to love nobody but you. Do it with me, Mr. President. Come on, Vice President. Joe Biden is like,
we're not doing
it. The Vice President can do it because
you're not doing the signs.
It's not going to work for the president. But without the context, that is the type of discipline that I am looking for. Honey, Joe Biden was like, know your limits. Meanwhile,
it's amazing because you think about the fact that the president is playing chess and the former president at best is playing like hungry, hungry hippo.
Yeah, well, if that, maybe Uno. I'm going to give him Uno,
you're
maybe.
Giving him Uno?
He's playing Uno.
Oh.
Uno, and somebody keeps telling him draw four.
The one thing we've known about Joe Biden since he took office is this is a man who meets his moments. People are going to say, wait a second. You know, yes, inflation is high. It's coming down. But do I want to go back into a place of more chaos like I had? Do I want to wake up every morning and worry about what the president's thinking? That's what people in Russia have to do.
And the other thing that I think is really interesting, because I really got to know Donald Trump post-presidency, and I got to see what he was like. And over the weekend, he was talking about how Joe Biden needs to take a cognitive test. Joe Biden, you know, isn't all there. Donald Trump had severe memory issues. As the journalist who spent the most time with him, I have to say he couldn't remember things. He couldn't even remember me. We spent an hour together in 2021 in May. And then a few months later, I went back to the White House, I went back to Trump Tower to talk to him about his time in the White House. And he had this vacant look on his face. And I said, do you remember me? And he said, no, he had no recollection of our lengthy interview that we had. And he wasn't doing a lot of interviews at that time.
The dementia wars continue. Which president is in cognitive decline? It sounds like a pretty good storyline for the Star Wars series. We'll see if they pick that up. There's your news cycle from the regime media over the weekend. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live video stream of this program every weekday morning at 11:05 a.m. in the Central Time Zone of the United States at TrumpetDaily.com. Or you can go to the Rumble channel, Rumble.com/TrumpetDaily. Speaking of Rumble, we had another promotion. What's the show? It was Friday's show. The title, Rudy Giuliani was right, and thanks to the Rumble promotion, it's up to 105,000 views. We got 390 thumbs up Rumbles for that program and 129 comments under the program. I scrolled through the first 10. They seem mostly positive. Didn't see any negatives, I guess, so there's probably a few embedded into it somewhere. But we also added, 210 followers to our Rumble channel over the weekend. So I know we've had higher views for some of our special guests that we've had over the last year. But that's probably those numbers. We don't want to just go through every single video. We really don't have the staff to compare all the numbers, but it probably is a record-setting promotion, at least, that we've gotten from Rumble. Well, it was a very busy weekend for yours truly as we went deep, me and my wife, we went deep into the heart of Texas to meet with 173 people, faithful supporters of God's work, and spent lots of time with many Trumpet Daily viewers. Came back late last night. Didn't really have much of an opportunity to look at any news over the weekend, so we had to get back into it this morning. So perhaps we can start with a lighter moment. You saw the montage. You saw the guy there at the end that said, I spent an hour with Donald Trump. And then a few months later, I think he said 2 months. 2 months later, I met up with Trump again. And he didn't remember me. He didn't remember some no-name reporter. One of the busiest human beings on earth who meets people every single day by the dozens, perhaps hundreds. And he didn't remember this no-name reporter. I mean, the comedic script, it just writes itself. And then there he is. He comes on Morning Meltdown and they take him very seriously with several R's. It's so serious. This distinguished journalist who has, by the way, an impeccable memory. He remembers everything because he's a journalist. But Donald Trump, he can't remember anything. Let's take a deep dive into this no-name journalist's memory. This is clip 7.
Donald Trump had severe memory issues. As the journalist who spent the most time with him, I have to say he couldn't remember things. He couldn't even remember me. We spent an hour together in 2021 in May, and then a few months later, I went back to the White House. I went back to Trump Tower. To talk to him about his time in the White House. And he had this vacant look on his face. And I said, do you remember me? And he said, no, he had no recollection of our lengthy interview that we had.
I don't think I've ever confused the White House with Trump Tower. So I don't know. I'm not going to say he's in the early stages of cognitive decline. But have you guys ever confused? We've got four people in the studio today who have never confused the White House with Trump Tower. I've been to both. They're very, very different. You know what else is funny about this? He's interviewing Donald Trump after they pull off the election steal. And Trump's out of the White House. He leaves January 20th, 2021. This guy interviews him 5 months later. And then as he's recounting his interactions with Trump over the course of 2 months, he said, and I went back to the White House. Wait a second. Who's in the White House at the time? God has he truly has a sense of humor because, in fact, Donald Trump is the real president. And these people, you hear these kinds of mistakes all the time. We've played them over the years with the French lady and the one before her, the circle back girl. They sometimes would refer to President Trump. Or in other mistakes they've made, they refer to President Obama when they were talking about President Biden. These kinds of things happen all the time. But coming back to Donald Trump, one of the busiest, most successful men in the world. And this guy who wrote Ladies Who Punch. That's a deep dive look at the distinguished ladies on The View. This guy, he says, how could Donald Trump not remember me? I wrote Ladies Who Punch. I know more about Whoopi Goldberg than probably any journalist in the world. So Donald Trump, he should remember me. This is the way these narcissists reason. They cannot understand how anyone would dare question their distinguished credentials or their popularity. I bet there's people at the failing Washington Post that would be shocked to find out that nobody's reading their articles. These people. This is from the Daily Beast. White House fumes at Trump World's latest cheap fake video. You might remember that clip we played last week from the Morning Meltdown, where Joe was going on and on about these nasty cheap fakes that the Republican National Committee or convention is creating. They're taking little snippets of the fake president and they're making it look like that he's freezing or he's wandering off or he's letting go of another word salad. Here again, we're in the midst of the dementia wars, and I can't even believe they're actually running with this hot take that it's Donald Trump who's in cognitive decline and not Joe Biden. You look at the video itself. I mean, obviously, there's some there's lots of joking and memes that goes on online. And it is easy to manipulate video. But there's a difference between taking an actual video clip from it and artificial intelligence, like you heard in that cold open, and pretending that it's fake or it was created out of nothing. A lot of these things that go viral, it is actual video. And whether people are taking it out of context, I guess that's open for debate. But listen, everybody is seeing this, as I said last week. Here's the fake president in obvious cognitive decline, and he's on the world stage. But for these talking heads to admit that, you know what, if he is in cognitive decline, we put him there. So they can't dare go there. Why would you vote for someone who's in decline? Well, we know the truth on this program. The fact is, the dear leader wanted him in office because he was the perfect puppet. He was the perfect puppet for the puppet master. Barack Obama, he's the author of wide open borders, runaway inflation, all of these things that are killing the United States. Bitter, bitter affliction. Fundamental transformation of the United States of America. This is from that Daily Beast piece. Is again, they're trying to defend the indefensible. It says here, less than a week after being derided for using a deceptively edited clip of President Joe Biden to suggest he wandered off. Again, this was where, you know, the parachute guys came in and the European leaders were watching that. And then Joe Biden wandered off. I mean, I think it's pretty clear from the video, but we'll let you decide. You can see with your own eyes. It says here, right-wing pundits and media outlets, including Rupert Murdoch's New York Post, published another round of stories featuring a similarly edited clip of the president, this time in an attempt to smear the 81-year-old for freezing up while on stage at a fundraiser. Yeah, and Barack Obama had to grab him by the hand and pull him off. Oh, it's Obama to the rescue, by the way. That was on Drudge. I did see that over the weekend, the headline. Obama's got to come in and save Joe Biden's failing campaign. So they get together for another Hollywood fundraiser. They're not going to Detroit to campaign in front of the ordinary people, to go to black churches or wherever, as Donald Trump did. They're going to the Hollywood celebrities. It's a dwindling number, by the way. But there's George Clooney, there's Barack Obama, the dear leader, and then there's the fake president raising millions of dollars, even as Trump's going to the people. Anyway, coming back to this cheap fake story, in a statement to the Daily Beast, the White House fumed at the so-called cheap fake, which it contends is a sign of a failing, it contends it's a sign of failing journalistic ethics at a number of conservative publications. That's the problem. Look at, is he wandering off or not? Well, you decide. Is that deceptively edited? Is that artificial intelligence? It says here, the practice of deceptively editing and circulating clips of political opponents is increasingly being used in recent weeks by Republican lawmakers even. I mean, where are their ethics? Where are their morals? Meanwhile, listen to the guy who wrote Ladies Who Punch. Now, his journalistic and ethical standards, I mean, it is a cut above. Listen, he's gone into the minds of Whoopi and Joy Behar. I don't know the names of the other ones. But by the way, who writes a book about The View? This is, I'm sure it's a graduate from Columbia, this guy. I've got his name here somewhere in my notes. But I could give it to you right now and you'd forget it by tomorrow. And then they'd accuse you of having dementia. There you go. Sunday's video features Biden and former President Barack Obama on stage at the conclusion of a star-studded fundraiser. Here we go. We're right at that point in the video. Watch for yourself. Is he freezing? And then you see the dear leader. He comes back to, like Dr. Jill often does, to save him. Here we go. We're leaving now. And there he goes. He's whisked off. But see, once that makes the front page of the New York Post, this really gets under the regime's skin. Because a lot of people, this is beyond some conservative blog. A lot of people read the New York Post. It says here, as is often the case with recent cheap fake stories, the Republican National Committee first posted a misleading clip to its RNC research account on X and cut most of the lead up to the seemingly innocuous moment, say the people who carefully framed everything about the January 6th investigation. They cut out the lead up to it. How dare they, these Republicans? They didn't give the full context. Isn't this rich? These are the same people who deceptively edit video all the time. All the time. Where's all the January 6th footage? Where's the tapes? The discussion between Robert Hur and Joe Biden. Why won't Merrick Garland release them? We need the context. I mean, Hur basically accused. This is an official DOJ investigation. Hur pretty much accused Joe Biden of being this doddering fool, essentially. So let's get all the tapes and we'll see for ourselves. How about that? Can't do it. When they sense that they're losing control of the narrative, well, you see what you've seen. You see heads exploding. You see them. They turn into doddering fools. This was on, I think, Bill Maher's show Friday evening. It was a clip that was on X this morning. James Carville. He's the Democrat strategist, and he's taking us back to Charlottesville and how that Donald Trump said that there were some very good people among those white supremacists. And then listen in real time as his precious narrative gets thoroughly debunked. Clip 8.
Good people on both sides of Charlottesville? I don't know. Did I hear that or did I make that up? That Trump said they're good people on both sides.
He didn't say that.
He did not.
Later, he said, I'm not talking about the white supremacists and the neo-Nazis.
A sentence later, he said, I am not talking about white supremacists and neo-Nazis. I'm not. Carville says, did he say there was good people on both sides? Or am I just hearing things? Yeah, you're hearing things. Actually, you're ignoring things that he said the very next sentence. And then there's Carville at the end. Well, yeah, okay, well, next subject. Let's move on. You hear a lot of that kind of thing today as these people are exposed for their lies and their deception and their false narratives, their hoaxes. The fresh hot take that I love, besides the fact that Donald Trump is senile, is that Donald Trump is an unsuccessful businessman, a total failure in life. They're still going with this one as well. I guess that's what they'll campaign on in their get Trump derangement. He's senile and he's so unsuccessful. He's a total failure. How could you vote for someone like that? Listen to Morning Meltdown, clip 1.
I still remember business people in Manhattan just dying laughing at the prospect of Donald Trump being this great businessman when they all had stories about, you know, his bankruptcies or his failure to pay bills or you name it, his bad judgment as a business person. And yet TV made this reality true for millions of Americans, and Donald Trump has dined off of it since.
Yeah, it was The Apprentice that made him famous. That it was The Apprentice that created the narrative that Donald Trump was somehow successful. It wasn't Mar-a-Lago. It wasn't Trump International. It wasn't Doral. It wasn't Bedminster. It wasn't Trump Tower. None of those things. None of those things that he built, created all over the world. It was The Apprentice. It seems like they should say The Apprentice was a failure. That went on for 14 seasons, by the way. In my case, I must admit, I don't think I ever watched one episode. But evidently, a lot of people did. A lot of people watched that show. Here's another from this morning, clip two.
I grew up in New York, actually. And so my memory is similar to Joe's memory of this show, which is kind of, you know, looking at the show and thinking, is this guy for real? I mean, I knew as a kid even that I knew about the bankruptcies. I knew about the Central Park Five case. I knew that he was desperate to be an insider in New York society, but really was never an insider.
Every insider wanted a piece of Donald Trump. I didn't even grow up in New York, and I know this. Here's a woman. She writes for the New York Times. This is the guy here who wrote Ladies Who Punch. He really wanted to delve into the mind of Whoopi Goldberg. The other gal, she writes for the New York Times, and she knew when she was a little kid that Donald Trump was a failure. Look at the way these people, they swooned, sorry to use that word, but they swooned before Donald Trump before he came down the escalator. All of them did. Hillary Clinton wanted him at her wedding. They all swooned before Trump when he was a celebrity. When he's a billionaire. He's got these hundreds of millions of dollars worth of property all over the world. I only have one more, and then I'll move on to a more serious story. This is clip three.
Donald Trump, because of the editing that he got, because of the way in which Mark Burnett, who created the show, portrayed him on The Apprentice, people started to think he was smart, he was funny, he was a good family man, and he was very good at business. And that image is the image that made him president of the United States. Those are the voters, the millions of people that watched The Apprentice for the 14 seasons that Donald Trump hosted it, that became his base.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it. I mean, you can look at The Apprentice. You can look at The Art of the Deal. I mean, as far as the branding goes, it's pretty extraordinary for where he ended up going.
I just saw in the lower third there. His name's Ramin Studi. Trump had no recollection. He saw him 2 months late. Donald Trump spent an entire hour with Ramin. And then he forgot about him 2 months later. How is this possible? Evidently, he's got another book, Apprentice in Wonderland. So he's written Ladies Who Punch and Apprentice in Wonderland. And the poor man, is devastated. He's shocked that Donald Trump would dare forget who he is. This weekend, as I say, Trump's over in Detroit, campaigning in the swing state. And President Biden, the fake president, is with Barack Obama, of course. Of course. They're in Hollywood with the remaining celebrities that are on the Dear Leaders train. It says White House residents. This is from the Hollywood Reporter. White House residents and Hollywood megastars shared a stage inside Los Angeles Peacock Theater on Saturday night for what turned out to be a record-setting Democratic fundraising haul as President Biden's re-election campaign netted a historic $28 million. Trump pulled more of that in when he got convicted. More than that, I should say. It lists all the people that were there, Clooney, Roberts, Jimmy Kimmel, etc. says how that he, referring to Trump, they said he's threatened bloodshed. He's told us he's going to be a dictator. Obama, this is what the dear leader had to say. Part of what has happened in the last several years is we've normalized behavior that used to be disqualified. Says here, the other spectacle of the nominee of one of the two major parties is sitting in court and being convicted by a jury of his peers on 34 counts. That's a quote from Barack Obama, the one who's orchestrating all of this lawfare, going after Donald Trump. Get Trump. You have his foundation. It's not allowed to operate because it was engaging in monkey business and not actually philanthropic. Can you believe this? He's got the fake press. He's got the big guy of the Biden crime family standing next to him, and he's talking about Trump's foundation and how it wasn't really philanthropic. It was just pulling in money for Trump. Says here, there was a time when we had certain core values that we agreed with. We believed in basic honesty, says Antiochus. We believed in paying your taxes. We believed it. Again, the Biden crime family that's pulled in tens of millions of dollars, the big guy's on stage with him. We believed in paying your taxes. We believed in making sure that we didn't make fun of prisoners of war, that we did not try to politicize our military, that we respected the ballot. That's especially rich coming from the dear leader. This one in the New York Times. Everything I've given you thus far, I think a pretty good lead-in to the more serious story. I think this was in the New York Times today. I mean, they're basically telling you, look, this is, if Trump somehow gets in, there is not going to be a peaceful transition of power. I mean, we know this, obviously, because there was no peaceful transition of power in 2016 and 17. This is the New York Times. The resistance to a new Trump administration has already started. I mean, they're saying the quiet part out loud. They're saying up front, we're still 5 months out, right? They're saying up front, we are not going to accept this. We're getting the shock troops ready. We're getting Antifa and all the rest ready. Opponents of Donald Trump are drafting potential lawsuits in case he's elected in November. They're drafting lawsuits now. It brings to mind what they said in 2016 after Donald Trump shocked the world and won. There were the high-profile Democrats saying, yeah, we're already developing articles of impeachment. He wasn't even in office yet. These people are sick. These people are demented. They're deranged. And a lot of them are coming under the powerful influence of our adversary, the devil. And they're just surrendering to that influence. It says here, one group has hired a new auditor to withstand any attempt by a second Trump administration to unleash the IRS on it. Democratic-run state governments are even stockpiling abortion medication. This is the New York Times. How many authors? Oh, just one. That's unusual. Usually they've got five or six on a story this important. It says here, a sprawling network of Democratic officials, progressive activists, watchdog groups, and ex-Republicans has been taking extraordinary steps to prepare for a potential Trump presidency. They're taking extraordinary steps, and the New York Times is relieved. The New York Times is thankful that this is happening. We've got to take extraordinary steps to resist. To prepare for a potential second Trump presidency, drawn together by the fear that Trump's return to power would pose a grave threat, not just to their agenda, but to American democracy itself. It's a threat to democracy. That's one of their favorite phrases. CNN had a segment today or yesterday. All these Trump supporters saying, look, we're a constitutional republic. They actually made a segment to suggest that, well, we're not a republic, we're a democracy. The Trump supporters got it right in the segment. And yet there's the reporter. He probably is working on a book like Ladies Who Punch. And he's there to correct all the Trump supporters on the street that would dare say that America is a constitutional republic. It's hard to believe we're watching this play out. A threat to American democracy itself. So these people, this Marxist left, the radicals on the left, they've decided, and think of it, they have no evidence, because he's been at Mar-a-Lago for 3.5 years. They have no evidence that he's going to overthrow the U.S. government and be a dictator for life. And yet they've decided that's what he's going to do. So all of this is justified. I mean, it's their civic duty to resist against the possibility of another Trump presidency. It quotes this Democrat, Trump has made it clear that he'll disregard the law and test the limits of our system. What we're staring down is extremely dark. Further on, it says, but the early timing, volume, and scale of the planning underway to push back against a potential second Trump administration are without precedent. You think it was bad in 2016 when the dear leader unleashed the DOJ on Donald Trump, the president-elect? You think it was bad when during Trump's presidency, they went after him with the Mueller investigation and the spying and targeting his supporters, putting them in prison even? The impeachments, the bogus impeachments, and then the attacks that have continued even as he returned to Mar-a-Lago peacefully. 34 convictions. There's something like 90, I forget the exact number. They want to put him at 4 indictments. Says here the early timing, the volume, the scale, and the planning, all of it without precedent. The loose-knit coalition is determined not to be caught flat-footed, as many were after his unexpected victory in 2016. All of this is orchestrated by the same man who, according to Drudge, came back this weekend, stronger than ever, to rescue Joe Biden's candidacy. To rescue his reelection efforts. Let's just stop for a moment to consider that Donald Trump, he not only left the White House in January of 2021, he didn't leave behind, as I say, he left it peacefully. He also didn't leave behind any entrenched bureaucrats that set out to spy on the incoming Biden administration. He didn't unleash his DOJ on the dear leader or the fake president or the Biden crime family. As we know, they've gotten away with all their crimes. Think about Donald Trump leaving office in January of 2021. He didn't leave any listening devices in the White House to try to tap into phone conversations between Biden and the dear leader or whoever else. He didn't do any of that. These are all actions and tactics of the dear leader. We've seen them. They've been caught. There's a paper trail. We have the receipts. And here they are now unleashing. I mean, as far as the timing and the volume and the scale of this resistance, it's without precedent. That's the New York Times talking, not me. Do you think this is going to be a safe and secure election? Do you think this is going to be a free and fair election in November? Do you think it's going to be a smooth transition of power? It's going to be none of those things. All these things that they're accusing Donald Trump of, guilt by projection, they're guilty of all of them and more. It's Barack Hussein Obama who has abused his power. It's Barack Hussein Obama who's weaponized all these government agencies to target political opponents. It's Barack Hussein Obama who's guilty of treason, for sure. Here again, just as an exercise, I've been, not that I'm excited to read a Barack Obama tweet, but when I do, I usually click on it and just read the comments. Some of them are, you know, not necessarily for children, so I'm not recommending everyone do this, but just you scroll down pretty quickly and you see 60, 70, 80% of the comments are lambasting him. That they're not, the ordinary Americans are not swooning before the dear leader. That's just left for the regime media. That's left for the talking heads who are educated at Columbia and who write books like Women Who Punch or Ladies Who Punch. The New York Times says, if Trump returns to power, he is openly planning to impose radical changes. Think about this. We've lived through 12, 13 years now of a fundamental transformation of the United States of America. And here's the New York Times talking about Trump making changes, radical changes. It says, and many with authoritarian overtones. Those plans include using the Justice Department to take revenge on his adversaries, sending federal troops into democratic cities, carrying out mass deportations, building huge camps to hold immigrant detainees, making it easier to fire civil servants and replace them with loyalists, and expanding the centralizing executive power. You see why they're so terrified, as we've been covering, of Donald Trump returning to power, because it's not about retribution. It's about justice. That's what this is about. Listen to Steve Bannon. He was at the Turning Point Action Conference over the weekend. Clip 4.
January 20th, 2025 is Accountability Day. Trust me, on the afternoon of the 20th, we're also going to start the pick and shovel work to take apart the administrative state and to take on its rogue element, the Praetorian Guard, the deep state. We're going to run them all out of town. Are you prepared to fight? Are you prepared to give it all? Are you prepared to leave it all on the battlefield? Ladies and gentlemen, it's very simple. Victory or death.
He's on his way to prison unless something happens at the last minute. But he's on his way to prison in 2 weeks. They hate Steve Bannon almost as much as they hate Donald Trump. They want to send Trump off to prison next month as well. Victory or death. That's Steve Bannon saying, look, we've got to fight back against these Marxist revolutionaries, or else the country is destroyed. These are people who now recognize and see the bitter, bitter affliction. They see that America is under attack. As it happens, we have a book that goes by that very title. And it's been in circulation since 2013, since the very beginning of, what do we got going on here? Sorry. The screen's backwards. I've got a little, never mind. We'll carry on. And if we have a promo, I'll get a little hairspray, although I don't like using hairspray. But there you go. America Under Attack. It's been in circulation since the beginning of Barack Obama's second term. His second term in office, all the way back to 2013, 11 years ago. I mean, my father was talking about it there at the end of Obama's first term. We're being attacked. This is an attack on the United States. Coming back to this New York Times article, it says here, he is no, referring to Trump, he is no normal candidate. This is no normal election. And these are no normal preparations for merely coming out on the wrong side of national referendum on policy choices. It says interviews with more than 30 officials and they're basically saying we will not accept him as a president. We won't accept him. We are election deniers. We're going to tell you right up front that if he gets in there, he must be removed. He must be resisted. Interviews with more than 30 officials and leaders of organizations about their plans revealed a combination of acute exhaustion and acute anxiety. Activist groups that spent the 4 years of Trump's presidency organizing mass protests and pursuing legal challenges, ultimately helping channel that energy into persuading voters to oust him from power in 2020 with the help of a lot of ballot harvesting, drop boxes and the like. It says, are now realizing with great dread that they may have to resist him all over again. So we're going to get another replay that's even worse than 2020. Remember the summer of love? Remember the scandemic? Remember changing all the ballot rules? behind closed doors, without legislative approval. All of that happened. I mean, the dear leader had it in place. I mean, they were working on it for years, but by 2020, it was working like a well-oiled machine. And even when Trump was basically winning, and some would say by a landslide proportion, they shut everything down. And then they continued to find more votes for the fake president. He got 81 million votes. He should be out campaigning on that alone, as he is. I mean, or as it is, he's meeting up with Clooney and Obama when he's really lagging behind. Why isn't he out there just saying, hey, I got 81 million votes. No one's ever even come close to that. They all know it's a lie. You know it's a lie. The people going to Trump rallies know it's a lie. And those reporters, the ones trained at Columbia, the ones that write Ladies Who Punch, they know it's a lie as well. They know the Democrat machine, the corrupt Democrat machine, they know that that machine lifted the fake president to victory in 2020. And this is exactly what the dear leader wanted. He wanted the puppet in place, even though it was clear then he was in cognitive decline. He knew that he could be completely and totally controlled. I mean, what you saw there at the fundraiser Saturday night, what a perfect metaphor for the government of the United States today, the illegitimate government. But there's the dear leader, Barack Obama, grabbing the hand of Joe Biden and leading him off the stage. It says here, the group leaders say they learned a lot from 2017 and to 2021 about how to run an effective resistance campaign. I mean, I read this and I'm like, listen, where are all the Republicans saying, look at what they're planning? We better be ready for this. You read through all of this, and then to conclude that they would in no way try to cheat their way to victory? How can anyone who says that or reasons that way be serious? I mean, they're spelling out every single way that they're going to try to stop Trump. And then you see what they're doing with the lawfare this year. It's Steve Bannon's right about how that the 2020 steal was providential. Look at how much more we now know and that we can keep adding to this book, given what they got away with in 2020. If Donald Trump would have won his re-election campaign in 2020, well, he did. But I mean, if he would have remained as president, he would be, as General Michael Flynn has pointed out, he would be out of office in 6-7 more months. He'd be gone. It'd be finished. There would be no more Trump, which is, of course, what they all want. But look at what has been exposed because of the steal. And look at now these prophecies that are discussed in America Under Attack about the resurgence of America, albeit temporary. This man coming in the spirit of Jeroboam, having to war to recover what is rightfully his. Or the prophecy in Amos 7, where there's really just a pause in the Jeroboam presidency. And the reason for that is because God still sees him as the legitimate president. Here's a journalist saying that after Trump left the White House, yeah, I went to interview him. And then when I went back to the White House to Trump Tower, he had no recollection of who I am. I mean, I wrote Ladies Who Punch. It says here, at the same time, their understanding of what Trump is capable of expanded after the Capitol riot on January 6, 2021. There's the January 6 hoax. Really, what they know deep in their heart of hearts is that Trump is capable of coming back and holding them to account. And this is what they fear. This is why Trump must be destroyed. They'd kill him if they could. Jimmy Kimmel at the big fundraiser, the Hollywood fundraiser, He called him Caesar again. Caesar was assassinated. They would love to see Donald Trump assassinated, these people. Listen to John Ratcliffe. He's on one of the shows, one of the weekend shows, and they're asking about the Hunter Biden laptop and, you know, do you feel vindicated now that in this latest Hunter Biden trial, there's FBI agents there saying, yeah, it's legitimate. I mean, we really knew that from the beginning. And listen to Ratcliffe as he talks about, look, the FBI knew all about the truth from the beginning. And he knows because, well, he was there at that time. The time that they received it, late 2019, I think it was, and then they had it all through 2020 when he was there. Bill Barr was there as well. This is clip six.
This has always been a settled matter. It's never been open to discussion or opinion. Either the government, you know, has the murder weapon with the defendant's DNA all over it, or they don't. And in this case, the government always had Hunter Biden's laptop with the evidence of his crimes on it. And so, you know, that wasn't a matter of judgment or opinion. That was based on conversations that I was having at the time with the Attorney General, Bill Barr, and with the FBI Director, Christopher Wray. And we put out statements because people like Adam Schiff and then later these 51 intelligence officials were attempting to mislead the American people about that. And, you know, the problem, Trey, is that some of the people on that letter that organized that, Jim Clapper, John Brennan, Mike Morrell, these are the same people that did the same thing in 2016 when they ran the first Russia collusion hoax. At some point, it crosses over from campaign dirty trick into actual election interference, and it's something that Merrick Garland should investigate, but he won't. And so, you know, the only accountability is going to come if and when Donald Trump is elected and a Trump Department of Justice seeks to hold people accountable under the law.
Accountability and justice, that's really what it is that they fear. They keep using the terms retribution and revenge because they've been getting away with all of this. The election interference, the laptop was real. The same people that signed off on the Russian disinformation, saying that the laptop was from Russia, these same people, they created the Russia collusion hoax. And now here they are. According to the New York Times, they're planning unprecedented resistance to Donald Trump. This is all that they've been doing for 8 years. And it's about to get even worse. I mean, that's chilling when you think of Ezekiel 3, 4, and 5. I don't have time to go through some of those prophecies. But start with America under attack and add to that, you know, your study of the United States and Britain in prophecy as well. You can get to these books, all of our literature, at our website, thetrumpet.com. Just go to thetrumpet.com, look for the literature tab. And you can order any of that literature or read it online if you like. Also, you can call our 800 number. Operators are standing by to fulfill your request. All of our material, the 800 number you can see there, 1-866-930-3024. And I would add that all of our material is offered without cost or obligation. We just need to know where to mail it to. When we come back, we've only got a couple minutes left, so we'll conclude today's show with a few emails that have come in recent weeks. You are listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
Daily news, Bible prophecy. See the connection on The Trumpet Daily. Are you feeling overwhelmed by the flood of news and information? You need something to sift the news and bring you only what matters most. You need The Trumpet Daily. You also need something to help you understand not just what's happening now, but what will happen next. You need The Trumpet Daily. Only The Trumpet Daily accurately matches daily news to precise Bible prophecies. Because Bible prophecy is the only tool up to the task of sifting the news down to what's important and showing you what will happen next. Join host Stephen Fleury every weekday. Go to trumpetdaily.com.
I'm having a bad hair day, so forgive me, but I'm getting a haircut this afternoon, so be assured that on tomorrow's show, everything will be back to perfection. I think I will make one request of the guys. We need a mirror in here so that I can look at a mirror and actually look at it properly instead of the backward. I don't even know how to explain it. I'm just looking at the monitor. I'm looking at what you're seeing and trying to fix my hair, and I do it in the opposite direction. So there you go, a little insider trading information for you, the dear viewer, not the dear leader, the dear viewer. This is an email that's come in. Trumpet Daily is always the fastest hour ever, even when Sam Livingston or Richard Palmer fill in. I try to catch every show live, but it doesn't always happen. I'm happy there is an option to rewind it. It says if I miss the first part, sorry. I always look forward to the opening clips. Thank you for playing the Celtic Throne audio. I love it. I've seen it 4 times and it gets better every time. I'm thinking of going again this summer. I can't wait to see Celtic Throne, the next Celtic Throne. That would be Celtic Throne 2 that they're working hard on this year. That'll be premiering probably this winter, maybe early next year. It says here on a different note, a few months ago, Stephen Fleury talked about his doggy and possibly bringing in video or pictures. Also, occasional birds drinking water or hanging out in nature footage would be nice. This world is off the rails. A lighter side of nature footage or happy pets would be nice once in a while. We've noted your request, and we'll get busy with that. At Edstone, I would add as an aside, at Edstone we actually had a camera installed that you could that would record what was happening out at the bird feeder, I think for like the full day. So you could go back in the kind of like a security camera, I guess, and you could go back and locate the footage, and that's how we were able to play so much more footage. I don't have any of these cameras installed at my house where the bird feeders are, and we can't very well put a bird feeder outside the studio here. Well, I guess we could. I mean, anything's possible, but it just takes time and equipment, money, that sort of thing. But the dog videos, I do have plenty of that, and I'll have to post some of those. She really is a character, our little doggy. She's not so little, by the way. Many thanks to you and the crew for another robust week of video content. The ability that you and the other members of God's chosen to chronicle and insightfully pinpoint the most impactful matters of the day is, as always, most correct and unsurpassed. This one here, in response to Mr. Palmer filling in, can you remember what day that was? Another powerful professional presentation. You have helped open my mind to the filth that we all have come too at ease with, or become too at ease with. Another one here says, I'm not sure which program these are concerning, but it says, amazing how you crammed all that into 1 hour without a wasted second. Today, I think we've had a few wasted seconds. I've gotten a little bit off track with, I won't waste any more seconds. We'll go forward. But typically, it is the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. There's also some moments of levity as well. To all who teach and do podcasts or lessons, thank you for your commitment and personal delivery methods. I thoroughly enjoy Bible study like never before. The various programs and personalities are very inviting. I usually open up the program on my TV. It's bigger and clearer. Also, I can pause, rewind, and just return to it later if need be. I also open up either my Bible app or the literature being taught at the time. So this is an individual who's making good use of the technology, the devices, and all of the apps and websites that God's work makes available. That's all we have time for on today's show. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.